From years of anxiety to warrior and mentor, Bradley Robinson created the Anxiety Project to help you end your anxiety naturally. Let's mold the new you and let's end anxiety together.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast here on episode 286. I'm excited. This is a really good one. This is about reframing something I learned in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. It's something that we have to unpack. I do this with my clients all the time, guide them through, walk them through. And I do this by asking the right questions, how you can perceive the experience as something beneficial to you rather than debilitating, defeating. What lessons can you extract from that negative emotional experience that you had? And so we see things. And I realized this within myself. I saw things from a one side. I blamed people. I blamed the society. I blamed God for what I was going through the suffering. But then once I learned that we have to look at things from all angles, maybe there's underlying truths here. Maybe there's truths where I walked into situations myself that I caused my own suffering. And man, that's a revelation, because you have to look towards your ignorance, your willful blindness. And that's a hard thing to do. But it was a revelation I had, because I realized that I actually have more control over my situation than I actually realize. And that actually brought a lot of relief to me. So we're going to dive into all of that. We're going to dive into all of this. This is a really packed episode full of so much useful wisdom here from my experience and also what I've learned going through this journey. But first, I want to give you a kind of a brief, insight into my current experience, because as you may or may not know, Maggie is pregnant. I don't talk about this often on the show or my personal, I do actually talk about personal stuff, you know, with anxiety and stuff, obviously, but you know, current events happening in my life. And I'm thinking a lot about how my life is going to be like once this child comes into the world in less than 2 months. And I'm thinking, oh, well, what about my routines, sleep patterns? You know, how do I maintain some sort of sanity? And so I'm thinking, well, I get up at 4:30 nowadays. I might have to push that to 5 o'clock in the morning, because I get up at 4:30 now so I can get all this time into myself. And, you know, but if I'm losing sleep with this newborn, then I have to extend the sleep a little bit so that sleep is so valuable for your mental health. So I'm thinking, well, if I have the wake up time to be 5 o'clock, I will still keep the routine in, because I know how I am without meditation or the cold plunge or the journaling. I know what it's like. It's not good. It's not good for me. I need sacred time every single day to maintain some sort of normalcy, right? Because I am the type of person that can plummet if I'm not careful, if I don't get exercise. Because if I go 2 or 3 days without exercise, the gym, I feel it so strongly. There's this demon or many demons within me that creep to the surface, and I don't want that to come out onto Maggie or anybody else around me. It's a constant struggle. It's a constant grind to maintain a high standard or a certain quality of life, of existence. And so I plan on, because I need to, there's no question about it. I don't like when others give excuses to what they have going on in their life. I used to work 16, 17 hours a day in the film industry and still meditate and journal and be mindful. I used to do all of those things when I used to work these crazy, long, insane weeks. And there's no excuse for not having these moments of clarity, of sacred time. You have to have this no matter what. You have to maintain that garden because it will overgrow, and it overgrows quite rapidly, especially in my life. But let's talk about reframing here, because to reframe something is to see something from an alternative perspective. How could this situation be a benefit to me rather than something defeating, right? And I think it's our perspective of the unknown that needs to shift. Jonathan Haidt, in his book, The Anxious Generation, talks about these two modes, right? There is discover mode and there's defense mode. And the unknown, we can approach the unknown in two ways. We can let it loom over us, and we can limit ourselves, and it shrinks us into our comfort zone, and thus the fear grows, and our competency decreases, and we remain a defensive prey animal. Or we can approach the unknown as something we can gain a value. You know, you go to school with this idea of I'm excited to learn and grow and be better than I was. Or you can go to school and be like, oh my God, how am I going to get through? I'm stupid. How am I going to get through these exams? How am I going to get through all of this responsibility? And that is so unbelievable that you don't have to see something from one particular side. Like, how could this situation be a benefit to me? How is it going to change me? So having a past memory and that memory generating negative emotion is a sign that you haven't explored this experience. It's very pixelated. And until you bring it into higher resolution, higher understanding, then the emotion will remain stagnant in this unpixelated, intimidating way. And your limbic system needs to understand, your amygdala, your limbic system needs to understand what happened back there, how you wound up into that situation that caused you pain. And how you stepped into it, right? How did you step into it? And how can you avoid this situation again in the future? But you have to build trust in yourself. You have to build trust and prove to yourself that you can traverse this chaotic landscape again in the future. That because you're just going to avoid it if you let this thing win, if you let this emotional experience win. And so by exploring your past, these negative emotions, you're broadening your view, your map of the world. When you decide to understand the emotional realm that you're avoiding, the embarrassing moment or the traumatic moment, it's hard because you may have stupidly walked into it, and you have to admit that you're ignorant. And that's a big part of it. And that's how I got over my ex-partner, and that's how I eventually forgave her, because I always blamed her for how things were. I was a tyrant because I was wanting her to meet all my expectations all the time. So when I got out of that relationship and I went through anxiety recovery, I had this revelation. When I started to learn about reframing, I asked myself a really, really difficult question. I asked myself, what did I contribute in any way to the toxic relationship that I was in? And man, there were answers, many answers that were unsettling to me, but it was also it also was cleansing. It also was a relief because I realized that I actually have control. I have control on how I want to perceive the relationship. I have control over myself. Like, I could change. Like, this doesn't have to happen again in the future. That's the thing. It doesn't have to happen again. But it requires you to be awake enough to admit your own ignorance. A lot of people don't want to do that. They want to blame other people. In this world, there are more sides to the one-sided story you are telling yourself. Like, why wouldn't it be the case that you only see what you want to see? It's easy to blame someone. It's easy to blame the state. It's easy to blame God rather than look towards deeper truths. And believe me, when I look towards myself, I realize that I have my own autonomy. Like, I could actually, it's freeing. That's the best way to describe it. It's freeing. Well, you're emotionally distraught, right? From whatever happened to you in your past. And that means you stepped into discomfort. You stepped outside of your comfort. You stepped into the unknown territory. In the unknown is where new information is generated. And what happens when you encounter new information is that you have to incorporate that, and you have to let go of your presuppositions, your old ideas, your own map of the world. You have to burn away a part of that in order to incorporate the new information. And that's a little death and rebirth. And a lot of people, many people, myself in the past included, I didn't want to do that. Because I was like, I like myself. I don't want to do that. And, you know, I wanted to serve this grandiose, self-centered vision of myself. And then that kind of brings me into this next question of this podcast, which is, how could panic attacks be reframed? You go through a panic attack. People perceive the panic attack as something, well, sensations, health concerned, right? So they become overly obsessed over their health. And this snowballs into health anxiety, snowballs into agoraphobia. But the question then is, when you have this panic attack, asking yourself, what could this mean? What could the panic attack mean? Are significant life changes happening right now for you to generate this state of overwhelming anxiety? Do you have a chaotic routine? Are you stressed? What are you stressed about? People don't have these conversations and then they wind up in an ocean of noise, an ocean of anxiety. And they're like, how did I get here? They feel like they're not themselves anymore. And no wonder, because you've been ignoring the cues probably along this pathway. And then it all of a sudden, it just hits you like a brick wall. So it's like, wow, everything that I've been doing up to this point, like, I have to actually look at all of these steps that I was taking. I have to look into what I'm contending with. A problem or a series of problems brought about the problem of panic, right? Because, well, which, so that's the thing though, a problem or like a series of problems down this road that you're walking brought about the panic, which then typically causes the person to obsess about the problem of panic rather than the underlying truths that brought about the panic. And then after learning about reframing in my recovery, I flipped the script on my panic, rather than, could this mean something else? Like, I'm not obsessing over my symptoms all the time. I'm obsessing, going on Dr. Google, going to the doctors. Yes, it's a sign. I'm trying to figure out the problem, but what if there are deeper truths to why I am suffering from this anxiety? And so first of all, I flipped the script on my panic. I told myself, I hope I get a panic attack today. That's the thing. That was a huge win for me. When I got so tired of trying to control how I was feeling every day, I told myself, I hope I get a panic attack today so that I can challenge myself. Because I viewed panic as an opportunity to prove my old self wrong, to grow, to be stronger, to trust in myself more, that I can be in uncomfortable situations and survive. And then I was learning about brain associations. I was learning that when you are in an environment, a certain particular environment, usually one that where I'm away from my safe zone and I'm going to be judged by other people and I might feel trapped and not having access to emergency personnel, that it would generate panic. And so I thought, well, if I can be in this situation and ride that wave of anxiety, then maybe my brain will actually create new associations between the environment and the emotional distress. Like maybe I'll start to believe that, hey, you know what? No matter how terrible I feel, no matter how out of control I feel, I can actually survive here. And man, that you start to trust in yourself. You start to build on bravery. That's really what it is. And then the bravery bleeds out into all other areas of your life. You're no longer afraid of going in the subway anymore because you're already going to the concert venues and you're feeling more comfortable there, or you're feeling more comfortable at night, or you're feeling more comfortable driving to work, driving outside of your comfort zone. That's the thing. Outside of your comfort zone is where the answers lie. Like I said earlier, it's in the unknown where you generate new information. You have to go outside of what you already know. And there's no pill for that. There's no pill for that. You have to do it. And when I learned this in my recovery, that's when I realized, man, I'm not going to go on medication. I know that it's not the answer. I know people just go on medication and they stay the same. They stay the same person with the same habits and routines, lifestyle. And that's not actually how you get out of your situation. The values of your sacrifices, the quality of your sacrifices determine the quality of your life and what you're going to generate as a consequence. And then I started to adopt this narrative of the hero archetype from learning, well, about Jung, especially. The hero is the one that confronts the monster, right? Because I looked at panic as a monster that can shrink and limit my life. So I decided to be the hero, which is the one that looks into the monster, dives into the cave, into the discomfort, and masters it so that I then have control over this thing. I see myself as someone who can conquer problems rather than the problems conquering me. Then my level of competency and bravery, it reached a standard that is no match for trivial day-to-day challenges. Who do you want to be in this world? What kind of spirit do you want to embody? Be the one who prepares for the flood rather than being willfully blind and the person who ends up drowning in the flood. And this brings me to the next question. How do you reframe traumatic experiences or experiences around abuse, specifically abuse? There's many ways. One, not many, but it's not simple because it's very difficult. It's not as complicated. So you have to learn about the shadow. So that's the dark elements of the psyche. You have to learn about good and evil. When somebody does something to you, when you're a kid or somebody betrays you, You have to learn about good and evil, because here's the thing. We tend to separate these people who betray us, who cause us harm. We tend to separate them so far away from us to the point that they seem alien to us. But they are more like us than we realize, because their monster inside of them is a monster inside of us. And given the right circumstance, that monster will come out in you as much as it came out in them. And there's a great book called Ordinary Men. I love this book because it talked about this police battalion in Germany of regular men. And they get ordered to carry out these really shocking deeds. They were ordered to take old, innocent people that they've never met before, Jewish people, pregnant women, and they were ordered to execute them on the spot. And there's something about being in a group. There's something about being around in this collective group, participating in this seemingly moral act. And then if you're the one, it's hard to object, right? Because you'd say, well, I'd be the hero. I'd be the hero in that situation. I would object. But think about, you're in a position of status, of security. You're in a job, right? And you don't want to go against everything that you've been trained for. You don't want to go against your position of, you know, I'm in a place of security. I'm with a group. I'll be an outcast if I speak up and let, and a lot of people, a lot of those men, they did not speak up, but they did feel the consequence of what they were doing. They felt it was just morally terrible, but that's the shadow element creeping up within them. They saw a side of themselves that they couldn't even believe. They suffered from PTSD, but they didn't know what to do. They didn't trust in themselves to not partake in something like that. And given the right circumstances, being in a collective group, like a riot, for example, it brings out a certain monstrous, attractive side. That's what it is. It's very attractive to be in positions of power, of control. And people that get involved in riots, they suffer from PTSD because they come back and they say, man, I can't believe I did that. Can't believe I, you know, destroyed what I did. And it's attractive in the moment. You get caught up in the excitement, the novelty of that. But that's what I mean by the monster is, if you have to always be on guard for this thing, it's there. And a lot of people like to think of themselves as not liking their job as a concentration camp guard. But if you're in a position of power and authority and you were being praised like them, that you're doing the Lord's work, that you're serving the higher state, that you're being a good comrade, what's not attractive about that? What's not attractive about that? But we all have that monster. People like to think that they don't have it, that they wouldn't be like that. But of course you would be like that. And there's a great scene in Pinocchio on Pleasure Island. It's fantastic. It's beautiful because Pinocchio goes to this, the children get kind of kidnapped, but also they get led to Pleasure Island. Like, you can go to this island and everything that you ever dream of is there, that you can serve all of your impulsive whims. And so Pinocchio goes there with Lampwick and all the rest of the delinquents, and they're allowed to destroy and do what they want. You know, they're young, they're like 2 years old, right? They're so bloody young. And that's a great it's a great image because when you're that young, yeah, you do serve your impulsive whims. You just want to get your toys and your cake and you want to just stay home from school and not and play video games, right? And so they're enticed into this space to live by impulse and desire only. Self-created egoic whims. And to be self-centered is to be power hungry. To be power hungry, you're not thinking about other people. To control and manipulate others to serve your whims is what that means. There is no care for others' well-being. There's no care. So to overcome and to reframe abuse and betrayal is to understand where the other person is coming from, what kind of pain they've been in, or how they grew up, or their perceptions of the world, and to understand that they themselves are in this self-centered way, and it's only going to cause them more pain. To get out of that is no easy thing. But if one continues to walk down that path, that's hell. And as soon as I explored this in my life, the people that did betray me, I forgave them. I forgave them because God help them if they manage to get out of that. It's only going to make their life worse. They are going to seriously wind up in very dark places. Very dark places. So what motivates them? What's the dark motivation? So when you understand their dark motives, then you feel confident and trust within yourself to watch out for that manipulation going forward. Once you understand how someone can do that, you're more awake. You're in a position to not allow that to happen. And as a child, yeah, we're in a situation where we feel out of control. We're, you know, how are you going to contend with an adult when you're like 6 years old? Because they abuse you and you feel like you're in this defense mode because you can't do anything about it. You're frozen. And this fear of adults and authority and this aggression takes over. You want to be a people pleaser because you don't want that aggression to come out in other people. Because you're walking on eggshells around your parents that were abusing you when you were young. You're walking on eggshells. You're trying to please them so that you don't get hurt. And that's going to bleed out into your adulthood. But now it's your responsibility to build this assertive side of yourself with certain boundaries. It's your responsibility. And then by standing up for yourself, by exercising, feeling strong, or, you know, joining martial arts, understanding the shadow, the dark aspects of the psyche that you don't want to confront, you perceive yourself as no longer a victim and being easily stepped on, but one with their eyes open. You are stronger. You're awake. But first, you have to see yourself stand up in order to flip the script. You have to see yourself say no to something that you believe to be untrue. You have to see that and go, you know, I'm more afraid of selling my soul rather than the confrontation. Because I know if I just say something to please someone else, even though I believe it to be untrue, I'm going to sell a little bit of my soul. I'm going to be at home at night thinking, man, I wish I didn't say that. I don't believe, you know, I let them win. I let them step on me. I let them get the upper hand. And then the next question is, how can one reframe an embarrassing moment? You know, like saying something you regret, tripping, or having food on your face without realizing. First, it's embarrassing because we're being judged by other people. You want your appearance to be perfect, and you want yourself to look a certain way. You displayed this fallible side of a human being. And, well, that's understandable. Of course, we're going to feel embarrassed. But do you not think embarrassing moments don't happen to them? Well, yeah, because they're a human being too. They're going to have embarrassing moments. And do you think they will spend time thinking about what you did weeks later, laughing or you know, thinking about them without them being so worried and self-consumed in their own problems? Because of course they're going to be in their head about their own problems, because they go through embarrassing things and they're thinking about how they are in the world. They're thinking about themselves and how, you know, when they were 10 or whatever in high school, something embarrassing happened to them. Because something embarrassing happened to them, they understand, you know, they understand how you feel when something embarrassing happens to you. Also, it's how you come back from the moment, right? Admit it was embarrassing. You acknowledge the slip, right? You acknowledge it. You laugh it off. Who cares? This is something I do all the time. I'm like, who cares? Who cares? Like, am I so desperate for them to like me? Why am I so desperate for them to think of me in a certain way? Like, can I survive without them being my friend? Like, if they chose not to like me because of that moment, then why would I even want to be their friend anyways? Who cares? I don't want to be your friend if you think so badly of me because of something silly. But so that's how I reframe it, as I ask myself some of these questions. I'm like, well, who cares? First of all, are they really going to spend time thinking about this weeks down the road when they have all of their problems and insecurities they're dealing with? Well, no. Even if you ask yourself what would you do differently next time, that will help you. Maybe you were texting and you're walking and you tripped over the curb and now you're like, oh, I shouldn't be texting and walking. Right? Like, maybe there is a lesson in there somewhere. Maybe I should make sure I clean my face off every meal instead of just throwing food in my face and running out the door. Maybe there's something in there. Right? You just have to acknowledge it. And it's always a pain, right? It's like, oh yeah, you know, I kind of slipped up this way and I kind of didn't make sure. I was kind of in a rush this morning and then this happened. I didn't get enough sleep and then I was saying something I regret, and, you know, it's better off to say nothing than just trying to please other people by saying random things, right? And you have to look into it. And the other day I was exhausted and I was around family. I was exhausted. I didn't get enough sleep. And I noticed that I'm more eager to say random things. But I said to myself, you know what? I know what I'm like when I'm sleep deprived. I know what I'm like. I'll say random things. So, you know what? I'm just going to listen and look at people and not say anything unless I have something to say. I'm not going to be so agreeable so that I'm not going to say things so that I can get attention and please them. I'm going to be careful because I don't want to sell my soul in any way. I don't want to say anything I regret. And I think that's a great place to stop on this episode. I hope that you find a lot of value in this. Reframing is crucial because we see things from one side. But maybe there's another side we can look at it. There's a lesson in there somewhere. And then once we extract the lesson, we can say, well, Now I know how to approach the situation again in the future. I know what to look out for. My eyes are open because I examined it. I looked into it. And now you can let it go. The amygdala no longer has to hold on to it because it knows what to do. The highly pixelated emotional event is now high resolution. It's now high resolution because you decided to voluntarily confront it. That's what it is. Rise above anxiety. I'll see you next time.
Brad's Powerful Anxiety Recovery Program is now available at unpluganxiety.com. The Anxiety Project Program is downloadable and puts the power of anxiety recovery in your own hands. Visit unpluganxiety.com for more.